Thank you for holding, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Pacific Basin Shipping Limited 2011 Interim Results Audio Conference, held on the 3rd of August 2011. I will now hand the conference over to Klaus Nieboer, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening in today. I'll just give you a quick overview of our results, commenting on each of the divisions briefly, in order for us to come to the Q&A relatively quickly. Pacific Basin made a disappointing net profit of $3 million in the first half of 2011. The results were impacted by an $80 million impairment on our RoRo investment, a $56 million profit on the sale of a non-core asset, an $8 million unrealized mark-to-market non-cash net derivative income. It's important to highlight as well that underlying profit were $19 million. Our operating cash flow was relatively strong with $69 million for the period, and therefore showing that still our dry bulk business is performing well and performing well to the market. The board have declared a dividend of 0.05 for the first half, and by the way, is committed to its dividend policy of paying out 50% less disposable gains. If you go to slide four, the dry bulk first half performance. You can see our dry bulk business made $36 million in net profit. That was in a combination with Handysize making good profits of $43 million, countered by an $8 million loss on Handymax. If you then turn onto the following slides and look at the actual market time being, you have seen on slide five, you have seen a dry bulk market where Handysize have outperformed Capesize rates for more or less all of first half 2011. The current spot market is on average between the two basins of about $10,000 a day. In that context, our view is still that the third quarter of this year will be lackluster. We expect an uptick in the market in the first quarter, fourth quarter of this year, once we have the seasonal benefits of a stronger fourth quarter. The values of secondhand vessels have dropped slightly by about $2 million to currently $23 million, and we expect it might weaken further. On slide six, you can once again see that there's good support of the smaller commodities. Smaller commodities are still driving the market with increasing imports, significant increase in imports into China. Overall, we see that the tightening policy leading to softer demand for raw materials in China have had so far limited impact on our business in particular. If you go to slide seven, the market this year would grow in terms of demand, estimated to be about 9%, whereas Clarksons estimate that the supply would be about 17%. However, we believe due to the shortfall of non-deliveries from the yard, plus scrapping, that we most likely would see no more than 13% supply to the market, but obviously still an imbalance. Having said that, the supply into the Handysize segment, where we mainly operate, is much lower and no more than 4% year to date, and most likely no more than 6%-8% for the year as such after shortfall. We can reiterate what we have said before, that the non-deliveries in the Handysize market are higher than in the overall dry bulk market. If we move to slide 10, Pacific Basin is in a comfortable position from the point of view we have good earnings coverage for the year. We have covered in 2011 committed 27,000 days, of which 83 are covered at a rate of $13,520 a day. I think it's worth to mention here that actually the coverage that we have taken on our books since reporting of our annual results 2010, which we did mentioned on 1st of March, or which we reported on 1st of March, have actually been unchanged. I continue, despite a weakening market, to cover at rates at the better than spot market and better than one-year market. And I think that's a testament to our business model that we secure cargoes well above the spot and the period market. On the same slide, you can see that the Pacific Basin still have vessels for delivery. The good thing is, of course, that these vessels are delivering from end of 2012 to 2014, hopefully at a time when supply and balance in the market are better than currently. We have 13 new buildings in Handysize and Handymax for delivery, and we have 10 vessels, predominantly Handysize, for long-term charter that will be delivered as well in 2012 to 14. If we move to slide 12, the energy and infrastructure services, we made a loss of $1.2 billion in that segment. In that context, we say, okay, that's impacted heavily by operating losses in the Middle East, so we've decided to close down Jarabok Shipping. They contributed with a loss of $5.2 million. And therefore countered by profits in our offshore business in Australia. We should also mention that our business in Australia is going better. We are taking market share, and we see benefits of being able to deploy a bigger share of our fleet, and all vessels are today, except two barges, now employed on contracts in the Australasia area. We see continued ability to improve our position in Australia, and are, in that context, more optimistic about that sector and that division than we have been in the recent past. Turning to slide 14, roll on, roll off. We have a segment net profit in the first half of the year of a loss of $5.3 million. In addition, we have, and that's in relation to the operation, obviously, in addition, we have made an $80 million impairment on our RoRo vessels, which is due to the weaker outlook in the short to the medium-term market, as where we expect that we will have operating losses not only in this year, but also in 2012. Our immediate focus is to employ the two new buildings that will deliver later this year, and generate cargo for our Mexico-US RoRo service. We should also highlight that the $80 million impairment have taken the combined value of the six vessels down to just below $400 million, which, by the way, is in line with the market value reported by brokers. Having said that, the market is fairly illiquid. So I will then just highlight our cash flow, which I mentioned on slide 22. As mentioned in the beginning of my presentation, we have made operating cash flows of inflows of $69 million. We have had financial cash outflows of $85 million. That includes a disposal of our remaining shareholding Green Dragon Gas, which were the net proceeds of $81 million. So after a repurchase of convertible bonds, etc., the cash and bank deposits totaled $631 million, and our net debt totaled $214 million. So still in a very comfortable position and therefore with ample ability to expand when times are right. Turning to slide 23, the outlook. As mentioned early on, the dry bulk market remained lackluster for the rest of 2011. We believe that the freight market would overall be weaker than 2010. We expect better supply and demand dynamics in the minor bulk segments overall, but also probably a market where we, in 2012, will see a better balance between supply and demand, but with the risk that the slowing world economy can have an impact on the demand side. We mentioned the charter market for our ro-ro ships are weak, and therefore that remains a big challenge for us in the second half of this year. And in that context, our strategy remains unchanged, that we want to expand further our dry bulk fleet when timing is right. And with these comments, I'd like to hand over for questions.
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. There will be a short pause while participants register for a question. Your first question comes from Sophie Lowe from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tao. Thanks for doing this conference call. I have a couple of questions, the first being on the, I guess, simple questions on the Fujairah bulk shipping. We see that you actually closed this business in June. Do you expect, like, I guess, restructuring and closure costs to be incurred in the second half of this year?
Sorry, could I ask you to repeat the questions? I simply didn't catch them, sorry.
Yep. I'm asking about your FBSL. We see that you have actually decided to close it in June. I guess
right.
My question is whether there will be associate costs with closing this down this business, which would be incurred in the second half of this year.
No.
Should we be expecting substantial loss?
No. In essence, actually, as mentioned in the announcement, we have sold substantially all assets. So the only outstanding is actually receivables, which we believe they are manageable.
Right, so you should in fact get some receivables coming in.
Correct.
Okay, my second question is regarding the ro-ro side. I see that you've made an $80 million impairment charge. How was this assessment done? Was it based on the market values of the ships that you mentioned, and has there been any provisions for the expected losses in made and for this for the second half this year and next year in the balance sheet?
It's predominantly a reference to, to the outlook in the market and what the rates we believe the market what one can achieve in the market in the coming years, and of course combined with other factors in order to generate the cash flow. The discounted cash flow. So it's a very traditional model, actually, but of course with a high degree of sensitivity. I only made the references to the book value. It was more a matter of giving you guidance where our book costs were now compared to market values, according to brokers. But as I highlighted before, and I would like to reiterate, it's a very illiquid market.
Right, understood. And were provisions made for losses in the, I guess, for the next couple of months?
No.
Okay. I guess my last question is towards the dry bulk shipping sector. I understand the outlook statement. You actually indicate the demand and supply balance will actually be better. Are you indicating really that it would be better from the poor markets that we are coming from here right now, or in fact, do you think that the outlook for 2012 actually is pretty good? I mean, how should we be? How good are you talking about?
I think actually, well, ship owners typically have better understanding of the supply side, and we do as well. In the context that we think that the suppliers have peaked. And there will continue to be significant shortfall in the actual delivery compared with the scheduled order book. So that's why we say, okay, that part seems that we're over the mountain. But still, of course, 2012 will still lead to historically high deliveries, but probably not higher than this year and last year. Whereas demand is, we still believe that the smaller commodities that we carry are still leading to high growth also in the coming year. Whereas, so, but the uncertainty is, of course, if the current global economy is showing further signs of weakness. It has so far not really, I think, impacted our business that the Western world is moving at a slow growth because we have benefited from strong growth in Asia and China in particular. But, of course, no one knows. And that's why we just highlight there is a high degree of uncertainty as to the demand side that there would probably normally be because of the recent weakness in the global economy.
Understood.
The next question comes from Cheryl Choi from Hong Kong Economic Times. Please go ahead.
Hi. May I seek for advice? We'll see there will be a further decrease in the third and fourth quarter for the dry bulk sector's rate because there are some reports issued by the banks today that there might be a 20% or further decrease on the rates. Could you comment on it?
Yeah, I think we don't want to comment specifically on rate forecasts, or we simply can't. Having said that, I think actually if you look to the physical market or the paper market, they both indicate a fairly flat market for the rest of the year, probably somewhere between $10,000 and $11,000 per day, similar to the current market. So in that context, the overall market would expect a flat market for the rest of the year, but I don't like to comment. I won't like to comment on the actual our own expectations, other than saying we expect an uptick in the fourth quarter due to the seasonal strength of the market that normally appears during the winter season.
I see. And in the report, you said Pacific Basin is looking into some opportunities to sell the non-core business. So what kind of business you are looking selling?
We have a few smaller, relative to the size of the balance sheet, we have a few smaller items that I don't like to comment on specifically that we do like to dispose of.
And will there be an opportunity to book for the one-off item within 2011's result?
Too early to mention, because we don't have anything specifically ongoing at the moment that could give us that sort of clarity and comfort. But we were just saying that we have targeted as a few assets that we would like to sell, but they are outside the divisions mentioned.
And for the impairment loss, we see a larger impairment loss for the Ro-Ro business in the second half of this year. As you said, there will be a loss for the whole year in this sector.
As we have said, we expect operational losses for the second half of the year in the Ro-Ro division. We have said that actually we believe we have been conservative with the approach we have taken of making an impairment of $80 million.
No impairment loss.
We don't find it likely that further impairments would be made.
I see. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Candy Chow from Apple Daily. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. I just want to have some update figures. Is there any change for the rental rate of this handy-sized ship on this August when compared with the first half of the year?
You can say the rates have been sliding through the summer.
Any change, any change for the second half and compared with the first half up to date?
As mentioned earlier, we wouldn't guide as to the expected rates for the second half of the year. We can only say that the market, the wider dry bulk market, expect that the market for the second half will be more or less unchanged for the current, maybe strengthening a bit in the fourth quarter, as we have alluded to in our announcement.
Your next question comes from Osbert Pang from RBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. The first one is that for the RORO impairment or provision, under what circumstance that there will be further provision on the RORO? So I just want to know to what extent the $80 million of provision already taken into account further downside on the RORO market.
You can say, I think as we have mentioned in our announcement, we have taken a cautious view that the short to medium term outlook is due to, among others, the weak European economy might be not as favorable as we have expected, and therefore we have taken the impairment. I think everyone knows that, but I think in conclusion we have taken a conservative view and taken, as mentioned, a significant provision here. But having said that, who knows? We are dealing with a balance, with a discounted cash flow on a 30-year basis because that's the useful life of these vessels. So, of course, down the road, no one knows. But I can say differently. I think we're building up headroom to avoid further impairments to be made.
Is there any way to quantify that? For example, like the overall rental rate down by another 30% or 20%, that would likely to need to make further provision. Is it possible to quantify for us with the number?
I think actually, I think I can answer your question in a different way. As if you look at the outlook, you can see that actually once you're through 2012, there is hardly any new buildings for delivery, and the new buildings that are for delivery after 2012 are for very, very special trades or even military purposes. That means actually you enter a market with a very, very high age profile, with vessels that are destined for scrapping, with no supply side in terms of new buildings. So all things being equal, that should lead to an improved balance and therefore better rates.
Okay, I understand that. The second question that I have is the Handy Max business make the loss in the first half, which in the announcement you mentioned that partly because of the higher charter rate. What about the second half outlook? To what extent this will be improved?
It's difficult for me to comment specifically, but other than mention the factors that we have highlighted is that the charters that were done in the past at a much higher rate are now running out. In addition, I think the book, you can say the operation, were unfavorable positioned at a time when the floodings happened in Australia. And one of the things you can see is actually in the second half and ongoing and thereafter, the commitment that the company has as to the chartered in vessels are very, very low. You can say for next year, our operating leases only consist of two vessels, actually, in the Handmax on charter in. So in that context, the exposure is very, very low. And as we also have mentioned, we believe that we prove the ordering of vessels we have made in the Handymax segment and the commitment we have made to certain charters is overall we'll get a much more sustainable business model with a break-even cost being very attractive.
Okay, understand.
Because we're changing our business model from being an arbitrage model with short-term vessels chartered in versus out to a more sort of business model that it looks more like the Handysize business model with own and long-term charter vessels as a base.
Okay. The last question that I have is that any number that you can share with us, what is the earnings contribution for the post Panamax vessels in first half?
The contributions? The contributions from the two post Panamax vessels are $0.3 million, to my recollection, dollars. But that's a reflection of that actually one of the vessels delivered very late only in the last days of June, whereas the other vessels have delivered early. So it's not a full picture of the contribution from these two vessels. And it's fair to say that both charters fully booked for 10 years in case of the vessels that we have chartered in, and in the case of the vessels we own for 15-year period, and they are both at a profitable rate throughout the period.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Yossi Babaud from Manachart Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes. Hi. Klaus, can you give us an idea about what's going on in the industry? We're hearing some of your competitors going bust or filing for Chapter 11 or Chapter 7 in the U.S. So it seems to me there is a faster consolidation now happening. Can you give us a flavor what's going on, what you're seeing, and what's the outlook on that front?
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say it's probably a bit of a blurred picture time being. But it's correct that there's probably a period of time where shipping companies want to have to differentiate a lot from quite a number of entities which have ordered vessels close to the peak and therefore start suffering, especially with vessels delivering in these years at peak prices ordered in 2006, 2007, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, shipping companies that, like ours, I believe, who have been prudent and selling down our exposure, taking gains on vessels and avoid ordering vessels at very high prices in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably also to do with that perhaps some of the, I think actually when the crisis hit us in 2008-9, I think most shipping companies were cashed up at the time. I also believe at that time these cases were not necessarily on top of the in-trays of many of the banks. They were fighting on all other corners than shipping. But now they realize that obviously they are into the very expensive delivery years. These companies have been suffering and have not generated cash flow for a period of time, and therefore the banks are moving in.
Mm.
So there will be no doubt a race and sort of where some companies might not survive. But it all depends on when did you order, what did you order, at what price did you order, and how has it been financed, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
and course,
on the face of it, that should give a lot of opportunities for consolidation, for acquisitions. Having said that, I think actually in our case, we are very, very demanding in the vessels that we would like to have in our fleet in terms of design, in terms of consumption, in terms of age, in order to ensure that they will fit the profile of our current fleet. And therefore, it will be for us most likely cherry-picking.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that for many companies in the same situation with a strong balance sheet and with an appetite to grow at some point in time, that it might be a challenge that, yes, it might be cherry-picking more than just sort of swallowing a fleet or a company. So I think history shows that the consolidation is not going as fast as one could expect in overall a very, very fragmented market.
Yeah. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Rahul Kapoor from RS Plateau Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Klaus. First thing on the asset values, how much more downside do you see in both Handysize and Handymax segment?
Difficult to judge, but I think actually if you look at the forward curve, if you look at the new building prices, secondhand, et cetera, and also given that Handysize is performing relatively better and Handymax for that matter better than other segments, I think we overall believe that there's not so much downside risk when it comes to the values, to the secondhand values or the new building secondhand values in dry bulk. I think there's probably a way on new buildings a bit further downside to that, given that actually the yards are not taking orders at the moment because owners seem to be unwilling to commit at the current prices.
So could it be that the asset values will most probably bottom out in 2011-12?
I wouldn't like to put sort of a date or a year on, but I think we reiterate, we don't think there's substantial downside risk to the current levels in Handysize and Handymax.
Okay.
For good quality. Having said that, I think there will be a larger, bigger discrepancy between well-built ships and sort of from good yards compared to others.
Okay, my second question is basically you mentioned again and again about the expansion of your fleet. So what kind of a mix of charters, new builds, or the second hands? What would be the strategy going forward in expansion of your fleet?
We said today at our conference with the analyst, and we can only reiterate that, yes, we would like to expand. We are probably a bit cautious at the moment. We think we have done a lot, and we think we are very comfortable with the acquisitions we have done through 2010 and into 2011. We have also built up now a reasonably position in Handymax. So we're quite comfortable what we have, but probably standing a bit on the sideline time being.
And my last thing is basically on the RoRo business. Could it be that you could probably sell off or do a complete divestiture of the business? Or would it be a long-term?
Our view is that actually we are probably in the darkest hour. And given we have a strong position in terms of balance sheet, in terms of patients, et cetera, we don't have a particular need to exit the business.
Okay, so you would
believe in the business. We believe in the outlook. We believe that actually that this is still a business with a quite a unique supply and demand balance, which was completely knocked off due to the world crisis in 2008, where volumes disappeared in many of the main trades in Europe and elsewhere. And we are just coming from a low level, having lost years of volumes that has been building up through the last 10 years, and they've suddenly reduced dramatically. So that means the fleet operating today, not ours, but the general market, is working out through slowly and increasing utilization. But we're not at a stage where there's really high in need of additional capacity.
Thanks for my side. Thank you.
The next question comes from Maxent Vinay from Cantalon Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Klaus. Thank you very much for the call. I have three questions. The first one is on the supply and demand in the first half of 2011. I think page 7, you're showing some numbers, but for the full year, and if you could give some indication for the first half. The second question is on the change in the cargo mix. The various commodities that either are increasing or decreasing substantially and having an impact on your business. And the third question is on the RoRo. I just want to clarify the book value that you gave. You said that's now in line with brokers' valuation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
There is a small discrepancy between the values and the book. But very little.
But is it fair to say that there could be more downside because brokers tend to be? When you look at the past experience, the past financial crisis, and how some brokers stopped giving any value, and you say it's illiquid, can we get some kind of guarantee that there won't be any more? Provision for at least the second half of this year?
I would never issue a guarantee, but I think it's fair to say it's not likely.
Okay.
We don't find it likely. I think based on the analysis and as I mentioned earlier, in the way of the conservative approach we have taken, I find it unlikely that will happen in the second half.
Okay.
Or for that matter later.
Okay.
Oh, because as mentioned earlier, we are probably at a stage where we should hopefully see an improvement in the supply and demand balance when we get out of 2012. One of the challenges we have had is, of course, that some of the the vessels have been deferred. So whereas we believe we have been out of it by, say, 2010, early 11, those have been deferred, including our own.
Okay.
Then the other question about the cargo mix, I think we've had benefited, which you also mentioned in the announcement, is, of course, the locks and the forest products have been the commodities that have increased most in the first half of 2011.
The locks and the other one is?
Forest, up by 6%. So that together with the agricultural products is about 35% of our cargo mix. But I think that's sort of probably the only one worth highlighting here. Concentrate was down, but I think overall locks and forest products were really the commodity that benefited us a lot. And do bear in mind that a big portion of our fleet is lock-fitted and for that same reason benefited from the strong growth. And that is to do with the issues that we have been highlighting before, that the exports out of Russia have diminished and therefore have been replaced by long-haul cargoes from New Zealand as well as U.S. West Coast.
Thank you, sir. Your next question comes from Fisher Z from Religare Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. I want to ask some question about the supply pressure coming from the Panamax size vessel. We all understand that Vale has ordered a couple of very large capesize. That means the rest of the capesize fleet will put pressure on the Panamax, and which will in turn put pressure on the Handy and Handy size, as well, according to my understanding. Could you comment on that? Because we understand there will be more than 10% supply coming from the Handy and the Handy Max alone. And how do you see the pressure coming from, especially those smaller Panamax size vessels? Thanks.
Thank you. Historically, there has always been a high correlation and sentiment between the various subsegments of dry bulk. But as an example, the correlation between Cape and Handy size in the first half of this year was only 14%. And in addition, one can say that it's supported by the fact that the Handy size rates more or less throughout the whole period were higher than Capes. So I think we believe, and we have said that before, that the correlation is out in the water. It doesn't exist any longer, at least on the current supply and demand balances, due simply just because of the supply side has never been so imbalanced through a much heavier Cape size order book and, for that matter, Panamax order book. And in addition, we also see that the smaller commodities, in our view, are actually growing stronger than the main commodities. And normally the market has been driven by the main commodities. So that supports our position, and that supports our business. And that's why we have, and Handysize market overall, have outperformed the other sectors or sub-segments of dry bulk. And I don't think that it's not natural that correlation will come back anytime soon due to the imbalance in the supply side and the relatively strong demand.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Question comes from Richard V from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello, Ms. Klaus. I have several questions. Firstly, the first question is regarding that, for example, if you charter your vessel out at current time, against the current spot rate, which is just around $10,000, what kind of charter rate you can get now? I'm just interested to know, because this will have a good indication for the future years. Secondly, is regarding the slow steaming for dry bulk. How much potential that you will see the benefits of slow steaming to absorb the extra capacity? I know that slow steaming worked very well for the container shipping industry, back in 2010. But I'm not sure regarding, the dry bulk segment. Can you make more kind of comments regarding, you know, whether or not a material kind of benefit will be contributed by the slow steaming. Another question is regarding the cargo demand. You mentioned that the small commodities, minor commodities, will have a stronger demand than the main commodities, such as iron ore or coal. But based on your first half results, I see that the actual volume of cargoes carried by Pacific Basin actually declined by, you know, by around 8 to 9%. So if the demand are so strong, why first half the actual number, actual tonnage of the cargo declined for your company? Can you explain regarding this as well? Thanks.
First of all, you had three questions. First was about the charter rate. You can say, yes, the current spot market is about 10. The period market is probably about 11. And I think we're being successful in securing some contracts at that level or better. And I think that's illustrated by the fact that the additional cargo cover that we've put on our books since we reported are still around $13,000 level, or above $13,000 level. So despite the current weakness and flat market, we have managed to secure at rates better than both spot and period. Slow steaming, yes, it's correct that slow steaming doesn't have the same effect in dry bulk, simply just because most ships are trading at a much lower service speed. You might recall that in the container market, you have had vessels that had in the past were trading at 24, 25, 26 knots, which are now trading at 16, and therefore it has a major impact. Whereas our smaller vessels would typically have had a service speed of about 14 or so, and in that context, of course, obviously on a much smaller daily consumption. And in that context, slow steaming had relatively limited impact. But it's fair to say that many operators and owners, including us, are evaluating from time to time if we can reduce speed and therefore save cost. But as mentioned, it is relatively immaterial compared to the container market.
Mm-hmm.
Cargo demand, your observation is correct. The reason is that actually the world fleet has not been utilized. I'm not talking only about our fleet, but the general world fleet have not been utilized as efficient as in the past. And there's a number of reasons for this. We believe that the main reason is actually that you have an imbalance in the market because of whereas in the past you had a much better balance between East and West, whereas Asia and in particular China are the main drivers of the market today. China is today about 26% of the world global dry bulk market, i.e. 26% of all cargo are destined for China. So in that context, there's a bit of an imbalance that vessels are quite often moving more often moving empty. The other side of the question is actually that because of the high bunker prices, the arbitrage where you move a vessel from one area to another is not happening as efficient. It costs you, it is very, very expensive to move a vessel without a cargo suddenly because the price of the bunkers are so high. In that context, that leads to inefficiencies in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, Klaus. Sorry, regarding the first question, I just wanted to get some confirmation. You said against the current spot rate, which is about $10,000 for Handysize, if you charter out, you will get 11 right away. Is that correct? 11,000?
Yeah, you can say it's here we're talking about sort of different periods, I guess, because if you're chartering in at 10, it might be in the spot, and you're charting out at 11 being the period market. What I'm saying is actually I think Pacific Basin's business model have demonstrated its strength in a weak market, that we, through execution of our cargo programs, in through our positioning our vessels, in simply now intelligence, if I might say so, means that we are being able to position our fleet better and therefore also get an execution premium. But a lot has to do with the ability to front and backhaul our cargo boat and therefore get a good position and get a good execution. And historically, we have been able to provide a premium compared to the market for that same reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Can I add a last question? Historically, the BDI seasonality will show that a second quarter will be the strongest, and then that's by the past history, strong seasonality in the second quarter. Then the BDI will be very weak in the third and the fourth quarter in general. So what do you see? For this year, the seasonality pattern for this year going forward? Thanks.
I think the seasonality pattern is most likely the same, and we have indicated that we expect an uptick in freight rates in the market in the fourth quarter, which is as usual. I think we're just betting on seeing the same signs in the market that we've seen in the preceding years.
Thank you, sir. I understand the next question is coming from the web.
Thank you. First question, is the price you're paying for the two new building ro-ro vessels higher than the downgrade book value you are assigning to these vessels on the balance sheet? And I think actually the first question is, as mentioned, the book values are very, very close to the actual market values. The next question, is the company's decision to take an impairment charge of $80 million on the ro-ro investment meant to give it flexibility in the event it exits the ro-ro business in the future? Next question. Presumably, the balance sheet will not be as much affected going forward with the disposal of a loss post-impairment, and what may be the circumstances that will make the company decide to exit the ro-ro investment? I think we have actually touched on these issues during the presentation earlier today and also during this call. The point is actually that we believe we are in the darkest hour, and therefore our view is with the strength of the balance sheet and with the outlook, partly because there's hardly any new buildings to deliver after 2012 in the general market, we would believe that actually we think it's a better decision to continue operating these vessels expecting much better future and much better market once we pass the current corners and the current challenges we have. So the point is actually we have not taken the impairment in order to be ready for the disposal. That has not been the idea behind. I think the reason why we have alluded to the market value is just a matter of giving the reader or the shareholders, the investors, confidence how we prudently have taken an impairment. Then there's next question. Are there any question marks over the financial viability of any of your charters? This is in light of the average earnings of your vessels being much higher than current spot market rates. I think actually the average earnings of our vessels are not to do actually with the viability of our charters. I think actually it's probably a testament to the quality of our business and the business model, as mentioned earlier. We don't think so. We don't think there's any questions over the financial viability of any of our charters, really. As one might recall, during the crisis, Pacific Basin has very, very limited fallout from our charters. And we can say safely that over the last 2 years, we haven't had any. The challenge is, of course, when the book were with the highest charter rate or with the higher contract prices, of course, the risk was relatively much higher in 2008 and 2009 when one had the collapse in freight rates than today, where the market had been, as mentioned, lackluster and flat. And the discrepancy between the actual spot period market compared to the cargo book is not that high, in our view. Any more questions?
You have a further audio question from Colm Murphy from Lloyd's List. Please go ahead.
Klaus, hi, this is Colm.
Hi.
Sorry to ask you to repeat this again, but I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding slide 4 where you talk about the Handymax performance. So could you talk me through the points where you say the relative expense of some of the long-term charter vessels and also about the repositioning of the ships following the floods in Australia? Could you just explain a little bit more how that has resulted in the or contributed to the $8 million loss from the Handymax?
Yeah. We think that the main reason being that actually we have had some long-term chartered vessels where we've entered into these charters earlier at higher market rates than current. And, of course, that has impacted our cost, our P&L cost, our daily cost of operating these ships. But these vessels, which is relatively few, have now elapsed and left our fleet. Those charters have now elapsed and left our fleet.
So this
so that
effect will not be there as much in the second half.
That element would not have effect in the second half of this year.
Okay.
The other element, and this is the main reason actually, the other reason being that some of our ships unfortunately were impacted by the flooding in terms of the contracts they were servicing, so we had to reposition those vessels.
At lower rates than what you had another...
Correct.
Okay.
So, and they were positioning some positioning costs here as well. But those are the issues.
Okay.
And as Mason, as you correctly have pointed out, we don't see a repeat in the second half, and therefore we are more comfortable with the second half relative to the first half.
Okay. Now the other thing I just wanted to confirm, the Fujairah closure, this is not the first time it's been announced today, is it? It has been mentioned before?
I think actually we have said that actually last year we took an impairment on the assets of Fujairah Bulk and therefore went into a closed down operation where we have during this period or during the first half of the year disposed of material all assets on the balance sheets of the company.
Uh-huh.
So we
but
took
you
the
haven't...
impairment. Sorry, we took the impairment last year. We took the impairment last year, and therefore we can safely say that the outcome of that impairment is that we've sold the assets in line with the written down values on the balance sheet of the company.
Mm-hmm.
What we have experienced this year is winding down the operation in itself have led to operational losses. We are also saying that we don't expect further losses at all. And the only outstanding today is not related to operations. It's only a matter of receivables.
Okay.
Which in the context is immaterial.
I guess what I'm asking is, I mean, is this, you said the impairment was there last year. But, I mean, did you explain the business background to that in terms of you said that, where is it? Unfortunately, there wasn't a strong enough business case or something to that effect.
Last year, you can say the overall issue is here that actually that the value of construction equipment have fallen dramatically due to the financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we realized the value at time disposal of this equipment were lower than on the books. And therefore lower than anticipated. And that was also in combination that we see the outlook in terms of other similar projects in the Middle East due to, once again, the financial crisis and recovery were not likely. And therefore we decided to close it down and call it a day.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you.
You have a follow-up question from Maxence Minot from Cantalone Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Klaus. I just wanted to get the answer on the supply and demand on the first half, and then I have another question on the RoRo.
Yeah, I apologize.
No worries.
On the slide, which is
page seven.
Page seven is indicating, as mentioned, we only have the estimate the full year data from Plateau, we don't have the first half or the second half estimate, indicates about 9% growth for this year. And according to Clarkson, a 17% supply. And this is overall dry bulk and not handysize in particular. I think with our comments in relation to shortfall, et cetera, we would expect that this year delivery will probably net of scrapping be around 13% or so due to the shortfall due to scrapping. So the discrepancy, and we expect more or less a demand from between first half and second half would be flat. So there will be an imbalance in the market of about 4 percentage points.
And delivery happened.
Be careful in comparing. First of all, one has to be very, very cautious in take that you have to apply sort of a bit of a pinch of. You have to be careful with the numbers because they're purely estimates from and not exact science. The other thing one should bear in mind that 2010 illustrating here with a 14% increase in demand was actually a year which we have illustrated earlier in our announcements that was imbalanced due to the fact that the first quarter in particular was very, very strong. And actually, to my recollection, it grew by 23%, obviously because of the fallout in 2009 in demand.
When you say first quarter was very strong, it was then on the demand side?
Yes.
Yeah.
To my recollection, I think the second half, 2010, and this year's estimate is about the same. We have had this about 9% growth in the second half of 10, and in the estimation seems to be the case for 2011 as well. I think actually that's probably a growth number we feel comfortable, especially in the smaller commodities. You have seen this year that imports of iron ore into China is up by 13%, which is obviously the main commodity. Coal is down by 10%, but that has less of an impact.
Iron ore up 13%, coal down 10%.
Yeah.
Okay. Just my question on supply and demand first half was basically I want to get a sense whether, you know, we'll see more delivery in the second half as we did in the first half, and therefore there could be some pressure on rates apart from seasonality.
I think the scheduled order book for the second half is actually not lower than the first half overall in the dry bulk market.
Okay. The question on the RoRo, I just wanted to can you remind the current book value post impairment versus the purchase value?
We have taken the book is now 395 plus
yeah.
The remaining capex, which I believe is 34. That has to compare with that we have taken overall an impairment over time of 105 and then depreciation.
Okay. So it was it's basically 105 versus 420 approximately.
Yeah, minus the depreciation over the period.
Okay, which was how much approximately?
Oh, good question. Yeah. We're just saying it has to be a few millions because they recently delivered.
Okay.
The first one delivered in 2009, so it must be a few millions.
Okay. Is there any more deliveries? This is all the RoRo fleet current plus new deliveries, or it's just part of it?
Correct.
The numbers
Correct.
You just gave.
No, the numbers mentioned here includes the deliveries this year. We mentioned that we have a capex remaining of $34 million. We have one delivery in the first half of August, and
yeah.
We have, well, actually very soon, as you can imagine, and the other one delivers in November.
And that's only 34?
Correct. The reason
The
reason being, if you recall our earlier announcements, actually, we deferred the, in order to defer the deliveries, we made a commitment to the art that our payments would remain.
Yeah.
Therefore, you can say the delivery versus the actual payments are sort of a bit sort of imbalanced compared to normal.
So the impairment of 105 overall, Is that on the 395, or is that on a lower amount? Since you know, two ships are going to get delivered later, so I just wonder whether the impairment of 80 million has been done on the entire fleet, including the new deliveries, or on the book value of 395, or 395 plus one of plus you know 80 million, or is it done on a smaller part, and therefore there could be some actual impairment on the remaining ships which haven't been delivered yet?
It's all of it.
It's all of it. So it's basically on the book value that you've done the impairment.
Right, down to the 395.
Okay.
That's
okay. Okay. And just, yeah, on the RoRo again, have you been affected by the earthquake in Japan, and to which extent do you think it's affecting the market, if it does?
No, it's different market. Those are typically quarter ram and not our design. And typically that's a very close Japanese market. So that doesn't affect.
Okay, thank you very much.
You have a follow-up question from Yosef Abode from Fanachart Securities. Please go ahead. Thank you, Yosef. Please go ahead.
Sorry, Klaus, I missed what you mentioned regarding the second-hand vessel value. You said there is a downside risk, and why you think that? The downside risk is limited, you mentioned, and why you think that?
Yeah. First of all, you can see this year that actually the handysize market is doing fairly well.
Right.
You can say the current levels doesn't indicate significant losses on most players unless they have bought into the market at very high peak prices.
Mm-hmm.
The demand is pretty good still. So I'm just talking specifically about Handysize and to the extent Handymax as well. I think actually we're also about a level where it doesn't appear that actually we'll see significant reductions beyond the current levels.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a matter to do with, of course, the forward curve.
Mm-hmm. But if there is a consolidation and competitors are going bust, and then probably they're going, and the banks are asking, as you said, their banks are asking these guys to,
yeah.
I mean, they want to liquidate their asset and sell the vessels. I mean, doesn't depress the prices?
Of course it could. Of course there might be sort of a fire sales here and there. But I think also one of the challenges is that sort of, I think there is probably, if I want to have to generalize a bit, I guess there's also a tendency that many of the players who are under pressure time being would quite often have ordered vessels of quality that we might not sort of necessarily be interested in, nor would say would be the normal market. I vessels of poor design, high consumption, etc. And you can imagine high consumption today is really, really a factor that impacts your buying decision due to the high bunker price. Because as I alluded to before, you can say if bunker price is 500 to 600 per ton times a handy size of 24 tons, then you are in excess of $12,000 a day to tramp your ship unless it's covered through a charter or similar.
You have a final follow-up question from Mr. Richard V from UBS. Please go ahead.
Klaus. One more follow-up question regarding from the financial statement, the P&L. I would like to get some idea regarding the share of profits of the joint controlled entities and also the associates. Can you tell me exactly, for example, what kind of major loss from the two areas, share of profits of the joint controlled entities and also a share of profit of the associates in the P&L statement, because both are reversed into a big loss for first half this year from either break-even or profit-making first half last year. Thanks.
The share of profits and losses of the associates mainly has to do with the loss with the RoRo operation.
What it means that railroad business are on a joint controlled entities, is that right?
You remember we have put two of our railroad vessels into the Mexico to U.S. Transportation business, which is the NAFTA Gulf, and the business itself has received quite a number of parties are looking into the are quite interested in the service itself, but it has not generated any actual business at the moment. So as a result, we have incurred a loss on this associate.
We are minority shareholder of the joint venture.
Okay. And also the associate share profits from the associate, same from the railroad business as well?
The 4.1 million loss that you see on the P&L, which is the share of loss of an associate, the majority of them is to do with the railroad, not the Gulf business.
No, I wanted to clarify here. There are two items here. One is the joint controlled entity, the loss is 3 million,
right.
And the associate is 4 million. So you mean both the joint controlled entities are railroad business and also the associate income, which is a loss, are also related?
Richard, the share of loss of associates is the railroad business, and the share of loss of the jointly controlled entity, the JV, is the FBSL, is the Fujara business.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
Sorry for not being precise.
Thank you, sir. There are no further questions. Please continue with any other points you wish to raise.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much for listening in today, and thanks very much for challenging us with your many questions. And looking forward to being dialogue going forward. Thank you very much.
That concludes the Pacific Basin Shipping Limited 2011 Interim Results Audio Conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.